here.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, so this is Queer Wisconsin 2012 Oral Narratives. I am here with Mo Tria.
Dotta.
It's Tuesday, June 5th, 2012. It's 8:50 p.m. We're at College Library on UW-Madison campus. Also here tonight, myself, is Chris Haas interviewing, and Paris Bansal is also assisting. So, I guess, why don't we start with, can you tell me when you were born, maybe a little bit about your family? Or?
Well, I was born in 1983, 24th May, which is, the date is really funny because that's also my mom and dad's marriage anniversary date.
Oh, how nice.
But my official records say 1984, 24th April, because there was a mess up. And back home, it's too much work to go back and fix it. It's just easier to keep it the way it is. So, according to my passport, I was born in 1984, 24th April.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was born in Calcutta and I was raised away from the city because both my mom and dad, they taught high school. My mom was a high school chemistry teacher and my dad was a high school Bengali literature teacher. And I was brought up on the western part of the state, which borders the modern state, Jharkhand. When I was a kid, it was part of Bihar, but then they were separated into two states. And I grew up there, and I went to a all-boys boarding school. It was a Hindu missionary boarding school, and it was a very pleasant experience overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, like the person I am today, I think majority of my characteristics and my personality comes from spending 12 years in all boys boarding school.
Yeah. The teachers were good then.
Yeah, the thing is my dad was the teacher at the same school, which is not ideal. I would not recommend that to dads to send their kids to the same school, but it was still fun.
It was fun. When did, so your education then, you went for 12 years of boarding school, then where did you go from that point?
Then I attended Presidency College in Calcutta. It's a very prestigious college. It's actually older than the university it's part of. So it was built in 1817. So it precedes the University of Wisconsin by 30 years.
Wow.
It was built in the colonial era by the British to educate Bengali people in Western style education. I went there with chemistry major. In our country, you don't get to choose the major later. If you change it later, then immediately you add more years to your education, which is probably true here anyway. So I chose chemistry because I liked chemistry and my mom was a chemist. When I was growing up, my mom left her chemistry teacher's job to become a high school principal.
Oh.
So, I grew up in an all teachers household. Half of my family are teachers, whether elementary school or university. All the way.
That's wonderful.
So I always liked teaching, and I still do. I wish to be a teacher someday. So I finished college there. Our college system is 3 years, not 4 years, unless you attend an engineering college. And I wanted to go to grad school and do my PhD in chemistry. And back there, you have to do a master's degree before you can go and do your PhD. And master's degrees are typically 2 years. So you have 5 years of pre-PhD education, post-high school education before you can start. And to apply to US and most of Europe, you need 16 years of schooling. So you can't just apply right after college anyway, because then you have 15 years of schooling, 12 plus 3. So I did my master's, and then I took a year off. I was not still quite sure that I want to go and do a PhD. And I was working in a lab at University of Calcutta, the same place I went to for my master's. And I applied for grad school and got into different places like, Urbana-Champaign, Cornell, UPenn, here. And I must say that I chose Madison partly because it sounded like a really gay-friendly campus.
That's awesome. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to hear. How, I guess maybe I can bring, come back just a little bit. Growing up, did you have attraction towards men?
Towards men? Well, so as I think back, there's this comic book series called Phantom. Mm-hmm. It's not very popular in the US, but it's very popular back home. They made a movie out of that, and the movie was really bad. I didn't like it at all. But the original Phantom cartoon comic book was black and white, only sketches. And this person is a superhero who doesn't have any special powers. He's descendant of someone who had a shipwreck somewhere. And all of his family were killed by pirates or something. So he vowed to, you know, get rid of evil from this earth, etc. And the story is such that the present one, so it's a post, basically. Your son and your daughters become, you know. It was interesting that in the story, usually it's the sons who inherit that position. But there's one story where a girl decides to become Phantom. And I thought that was interesting. I liked it. In that story, he had a cousin who in the story is like 13 or 14 years old. And his name was Rex. And he runs around in his loincloth because he lives in the middle of a tropical forest. And I did not realize why I really liked whenever he was in the story because he runs around in his loincloth. And at this time, how old am I? Like 5, 6, 7. Oh. And I really liked those parts. I remember the moment I would get the new books,
yeah.
I'd run up to my room and read them. And now that I think back, I was talking to my dad a couple of years ago and told him, you know, I was thinking back, like we were talking about comic books that we liked as a kid. And then I realized that I really liked those parts because Rex was there. So as a 5, 6, 7 years old, I was clearly attracted to, you know, mid-teenage boys. So, yeah. And then I went to a boarding school. At that point, if you spend 24 hours with other guys, it's very hard not to notice that you like boys. So I never had any doubt ever that I like boys.
So it was never a question. It was always open. Did your parents know early on, or?
It's hard to tell with parents because sometimes parents can be very perceptive. They can also be very blind. I don't know. I have to ask them. I have not really asked them.
Do they know that you're out? I assumed that I should ask for the interview. Okay. And do you have siblings?
No, I'm the only child.
Only child.
Yeah.
That's great. So then, once you came here then, choosing it partially because of the LGBTQ awareness and acceptance, what, I guess, maybe you could just tell me about your first experiences here or, you know, kind of how coming here and how that all kind of went for you?
Well, at the beginning, I was really busy with grad school. So I didn't really, I went out only with chemists. Because that's the thing about school, that if you move to a new city and you are attending school, you make new friends who are classmates, and then it escalates from there. You find more and more friends. And I like talking, and I like having friends. And, you know, but back then, I was too busy with grad school, and I only went to chemistry parties and as such. And then once I settled down into my graduate life, then I started going out a little bit later. I must give special thanks to Q grads. It's a group of queer grad students. And I met most of my gay friends in Madison who are mostly graduate students there. And it was a wonderful experience. I think people who come to grad school and who seek information about LGBTQ support groups, they must be always told that they must know about Q grads. It's a wonderful group. Like almost all of my friends, I met them at Q grads. Or 2 Q grads.
Okay.
You know, I would meet someone and they would be like, oh, this Friday night we are going to this place because they have a concert, or we are going to this bar for a couple of drinks. And then I'll go with them, and then they have other gay friends or other lesbian friends or other bi friends or, you know, other genderqueer friends who'd show up, and then you have a whole group of queer friends, which is very nice.
Yes, very accepting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess then I'm back up just a little. Did you have a coming out experience or anything that ever made you, you know, I guess?
Well, so since I went to boarding school, and I have had boyfriends in the boarding school, and it's a little bit, the environment is a little bit different. I would even compare it to a prison environment where it's all people of the same sex, boys growing up. And to some extent, it's accepted that boys would have special friendships. They don't really want you to have sex. because I know people who have been expelled from the school for having sex with other people or doing sexual acts or and getting caught. But it was accepted that you might have special interest in someone. Even teachers would sometimes make jokes. Oh, yeah, you just want to sit next to him or something like that. Jokingly, lightly. But to some extent, it was accepted. So I was never sure what my dad's thoughts were. Because he's a teacher, so of course he knows, right? So I was not sure. He may have thought that, I mean, he's an intelligent person. He probably thought either it's a phase in puberty, which is true. Like, I have lots of friends from boarding school, I obviously can't name,
of course,
who I know have had sexual contact with other boys, but I also know they are straight and they like women and they don't like men at all as they grew up. But when you go to puberty, number one, you don't really have access to girls because you spend all your time at the boarding school. And other than that, even if you didn't go to a boarding school, that's all boys. Others, you know, someone who's of another sex is scary. Mm-hmm. As you are growing up, you don't really know what to do in front of them. You're confused. You're kind of, you know, like you can't really talk. You kind of become sort of dumb in front of them. And it's much easier to have contact with other boys, I think, in general, is true.
Sure. Okay. So then for your dad, you said that you're not really quite sure how he felt.
Yeah, like when I told my mom that, you know, when I came out, and that was after I came to grad school, that I'm like, okay, this thing about like not talking about things is kind of really ridiculous because we are all grown up people and we should be able to talk about things. And when I told my mom asked like, oh, so this person was your boyfriend then? Like, yes. She was like, oh, I never suspected. Like, how can you not?
Right.
Because she would say things like, oh, look at you guys spending all your time together. You are like an old married couple. I'm like, you have no idea how true that is. But, you know, moms are perceptive, but at the same time, the ideal, quote-unquote ideal to parents, they don't even think that you can be different. People always assume that you are part of the majority in society. So she would ask me questions about, oh, did you make any new friends? Did you meet any new girls? Oh, all your friends are getting married. I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. And I got to talk to her. But I talked to my dad first. Somehow it seemed more apropos. And I think since late teens and post teens, I think I've been closer to my dad. When I was a kid, I was growing up, I lived with my mom because they worked in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So dad would come back home in the weekends. So I was very close to my mom. But I think once I grew up, like 18, 19, went to college, I became closer to dad. In terms of like, I would never tell mom. I have dated girls in college, but I would never tell mom about that in general.
Sure.
Like I might tell dad like, oh, that girl is really cute. But I would not tell mom, I think. It's not that I'm closer to dad in that sense. I'm closer to dad in the sense that if I'm going to talk about my dating life, I'd rather talk to dad.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So how old were you when you came out then? After you went back after grad school?
Let me see. I came here in 2008. So I was 25. I was 26 the next year.
Okay.
Which is quite late. But it was not quite like they were like, you know, so surprised. Dad didn't even, you know, seem very that surprised. He was surprised, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not surprised at all. In fact, I remember when I was telling him, we actually had a whole discussion about queer people in history, including, you know, famous painters and scientists and poets, and how it's perfectly normal and natural, but a less occurring event in human society, that people might be attracted to the same sex. And he's like, yeah, I mean, you can understand that it's not, I can't just say, oh, I accept it right now.
Sure.
But I don't see anything wrong with it. And I'm sure given a little bit more time, it would settle down a bit. And if I behave like I'm not accepting, that's, I'm sorry. But, you know, we are all humans and we all need time to adjust to new situations.
That's great. So now that where are you at in your schooling now? Where's your life right now?
Well, I'm in fourth year of grad school. I did not enjoy research that much in my first research group, so I switched research groups in my third towards the end of my third year, which is kind of late. Research is going great with my new research group. I only started last August and I have already built a whole new lab. Things are, I think, going good. In fact, my advisor told me earlier this week that he's very optimistic about the couple of projects I'm working on. He thinks that we have made very decent progress given how much time we have worked on them. So that's good. I'm dating someone who is from Plainfield, Wisconsin, but lives in Madison now. He used to be married to a woman. Even if he's gay, he came out a few years ago. He has two really sweet girls.
Oh, how nice.
They're 11 and 7. In fact, I managed to finish work earlier than I thought. So I went back to his place. I made dinner.
Oh.
And they were very excited because I was away this weekend up north and they have not seen me in 5-6 days. So when I told him, I was not supposed to go over because I was supposed to work late. When I told him that while I'm coming over, and he's like, oh, they're screaming in the background. Coming over.
Oh,
so
nice.
I guess, yeah, I can feel that I'm 29 years old. I think I'll finish grad school in a couple of years. My personal life is quite settled down. So that's where I am in life. I want to finish my PhD and I want to go into academia and teach and do research. But often, like, my heart is not completely set on that because I have seen friends, you know, not wanting to go into teaching, and after going to grad school and being a TA and teaching chemistry courses,
mm-hmm.
these are specifically chemists, and they would be like, oh, I love teaching, I want to go teach. And some people would be really interested in teaching, and then they would be like, oh, I can't. It's just, they get tired of academics.
Right.
And they just want to move on and get an industrial job and settle down in
yeah.
their professional career. I don't know, I want to teach and I want to be a professor, but I can't say that 2 years later I think
exactly.
the same thing. And many things depend on it, you know, where your partner lives, whether they can move, you know, whether you want to move back to India, how much you miss home, or whether your partner is willing to move back with you all the way
right.
to the other side of the world, or which is harder for them because I have already spent 4 years here and I'm already used to living here.
Mm-hmm.
For them, it would be a completely new country, new culture, new languages and everything. Speaking of which, my boyfriend runs a language services company and he speaks multiple languages. My mother tongue is Bengali and he's learning Bengali right now. And he's coming back home in December with me. So my dad is very excited
wonderful.
To meet him.
That's wonderful. Did you think when you were a young boy, knowing how you felt about other boys and not really knowing, you know how that is. Did you ever consider that you would have children? Or did you ever hope to have them in your life?
Yes, I distinctly remember when I was young, I used to tell my mom that I have to have at least 4 kids.
Uh-huh.
Because who has less than 4 kids? And then as you grow up, you realize that it's not easy. That 1 kid is hard enough. And also you should not be contributing to the population explosion on this earth because someday we will not be able to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I always wanted children. I'm actually very happy that my boyfriend has 2 kids. I love them.
I bet.
I mean, they don't have to be my biological children, but I really like kids.
That's wonderful. So, like, when you came out here, were there, like, certain places that you went on the campus or around Madison area where you felt more comfortable with your sexuality, whether that's either you're going out or even if it's just you and your boyfriend or...
Well... As I said, I would say again, Kew Grants was a very nice place.
Mm-hmm.
When I was out to, you know, good friends, but not really all my coworkers or the whole department. I would still feel completely comfortable going there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a way to come out. And people ask, oh, why can't you come to my house this Thursday? We are having tea or we are having beer. We are watching this game. Be like, well, I'm going to this group of queer grad students as a queer and it's called Kew Grants. So that's why you can't come. And they'd be like, oh... So that's one way of saying it. You don't have to just... And besides, it's not your duty. You know, coming out is a process that's never really complete because when you meet
mm-hmm.
new people, they assume always that you
always.
Are heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always... Coming out is never complete. It would just go... Even if you're 8 years old, you might still have to come out to someone someday.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm a very resourceful person. I really didn't have to. I actually mainly talked to my dad more than anyone else when I was coming out. And I would also thank Mike Wedlock. He's a chemistry professor at Gettysburg College. He's actually currently the department chair. He was doing a sabbatical in my old group. And right around the time I was coming out, he was in my research group. And then I was talking to him, and I came out to him, and he was very supportive. And when I felt awkward about going out to... Because I used to go out a lot back home, but as you can imagine, there are no gay bars in Calcutta, right?
The whole
gay thing is very clandestine. So I didn't really... It's not like you go out to a gay club and dance and buy someone a drink or ask someone out, ask someone for their phone number. It's not like exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more shady. It's not out in the open. I believe it has changed now over the last 4 years, because in 2008 I came here, and late 2008 or early 2009, I don't remember exact date, when they repealed the old Victorian British law about unnatural sexual activities. So they got rid of that law.
Yeah.
So which was, I was very proud of our legislative system that they finally got rid of that. Because even if that law has not been used in many decades against someone, it has been repeatedly used to threaten people. I remember an event where I'm coming back home from college, and there's this really nice large park around the Serpentine Lake, and there are nice benches and stuff there. And I remember I got off the train and I decided to walk in there because it was a really nice summer evening and have a cigarette. And these, you know, there are like policemen there, of course, if it's a dark park often, as in Madison too. And someone just approached me and told me, like, what are you doing here? And we know all what you guys are like. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then what I told them, like, if you think I'm here, whatever reason, I can give you my home phone number. Why don't you call my home? I live in this address. I'm not bluffing you. You can come with me right now.
Right.
And that completely put him back. Like, I'm not afraid of him. And, you know, that's how they manipulate you. They think you are afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not standing up for yourself, then you have to be afraid all your life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very
yeah.
True. That's very true.
So when I came here, then Mike, I would go out a lot with Mike. I started by going out to Plan B because it's close, and Shamrock.
Mm-hmm.
They are both very friendly places. I recommend anyone who is coming out to go there with friends if they feel uncomfortable, and see how that, you know, queer people have fun too. And they do go out and they have drinks and they have a nice chat too. And, you know, it's not like you walk into a dark alleyway and, you know,
right.
it's not a shady life.
That's very true.
So, yes, I would say that the LGBT Campus Center was a very nice place to hang out. I would often get lunch from the carts and go there. I met a lot of friends there. I'm not going to mention names because I know so many people that I would probably meet some of them. And I don't want to do that. All of them were wonderful. All of them were very helpful. They have a really nice library. And my good friend Abel, who was a student at Library Science here, he was the librarian there.
Mm-hmm.
So he would send me recommendations like, oh my God, because he's sitting there working all day. So he's probably cataloging and reading.
Sure.
And he would give me recommendations of books to read, which was nice of him.
That is nice. I like friends that give good book titles. That's a good way to keep your mind going.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of your friendships change after you came out?
Yes. Without mentioning names again,
yes.
Because I don't want to. I had a very good friend in grad school, my classmate. And used to hang out all the time, like bike rides in the weekends, going out in the weekends, etc. And he asked me one day that, you know, if I ask any of the girls out, and I can tell that some of them are interested in you. I'm like, well, the thing is that I have dated girls in college because, you know, when I was in high school, I never even felt attracted to girls. Then when I went to college and I'm growing up, I'm like 17, 18, you know, I'm like, oh, I kind of understand what all this fuss is about, why these guys are always talking about girls. And they have their charm, and I like them, and I dated a few, didn't quite work out. And then I figured out that even if I like girls, not enough, clearly.
Yeah.
And so I told him, and he's like, oh, okay, oh, I never thought. And then he pressed the issue up, oh, so do you think I'm attractive? I'm like, I'm not going to answer that question, because you're my friend, and it doesn't matter. And he pressed the issue, and I told him, like, yes, you are, but it doesn't matter. Number one, you're my friend. Number two, you're straight, so I don't care. And I don't know, he took it somewhat offensively, and we are not friends anymore, and we don't talk anymore. And while I used to miss the friendship back at first, but I don't anymore because friends come and go. And if people don't like who you are, they can walk their own way. You know, you can't drag everyone along in your life with you.
Absolutely. That's really true. Have you ever done any, like, LGBT, like, activism or anything? Some people?
Well, the LGBT Campus Center has a coming out event every year. A couple of years I've helped them with that. I'm also a member of Fair Wisconsin. And whenever there's an LGBT festival in Madison, they often have a booth where they have flyers and stuff so people can know more about their work, and they can have more members, thereby strengthening themselves, because unity is power.
Mm-hmm.
And I have worked for them, for example, last year at Fruit Fest, I managed their booth for 3 or 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
handing out stuff, telling people how they fought for domestic partnership benefits. By the way, this was the only Big Ten school which didn't help them. I was very disappointed when I came here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wait a second, I came here because this city is super LGBT friendly, and as far as I understood, the campus is too. But what? There's no... And not only for same-sex couples. I believe they did not have domestic partnership benefits.
Correct.
For heterosexual couples as well, which is really strange.
Mm-hmm.
But they have that now, so I explain to people why it's, important. Collecting their addresses and phone numbers if they want to join, etc. So I've done that, and then a very good experience was in January when I went to Milwaukee they have an annual leadership conference,
mm-hmm.
with very, very, very nice talks. I encourage everyone to go to that one. There were very nice talks about Wisconsin queer history, old new. Unfortunately, it's usually always like old newspaper reports which are kind of condemning or...
Yeah.
Things like that. But it's still history. I mean, you
Correct.
Can still go to the archives. And I don't remember his name. He was a historian at UW-Madison. He's retired now. He writes a column at Our Lives magazine.
Oh.
His talk was particularly very good. That particularly stands out in my memory. So that was a very good experience. I met a lot of people, some people from the Lesbian Fund of Milwaukee. Very, very nice people. I would go back again next year. So again, anyone who wants to go, they should go. Anyone who wants to make connections, learn about how these organizations work and what they can do, they should go to these events.
And what was the name of that program?
It was called the Annual Wisconsin Queer Leadership Conference,
okay,
or
sure.
LGBT Leadership Conference. I'm not sure about the exact term.
Okay.
It was where they, I believe they have... specific awards and stuff that they
sure.
give out to people.
Okay.
Tammy Baldwin was there. She gave a nice speech.
That's wonderful. Let's see here. Have you had any negative interactions with people, like in doing any of your Fair Wisconsin work, or I guess maybe even just being around campus or anything?
I guess not really, because if you are at an LGBT event, no one is going to, I think we are strong enough that no one is going to poke their head in and say something. If they don't have to say nice things, they would stay clear.
Sure.
But I have not done other kind of field work where you interact with everyone. So
mm-hmm.
I don't really know how that would be.
Right.
I remember one event so far in Madison. I was walking down South Park Street with a friend that... It's not a friend anymore. And someone yelled something. It looked like four guys drunk and driving a car down the street. And they yelled something and said, and he's like, did you hear what they said? I'm like, they said, hey, because they're drunk and they're just happy. He's like, no, they said gay. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever, I don't care. And they came back the next block and they yelled again. And by this time, we are already at the intersection where there are people around. So I stopped and looked around and made a gesture like, what's going on? And then they did not come back, though. I would say that was my only bad experience in Madison so far.
Did it give you little tingles? Did it make you feel a little aware?
No, it made
me
angry. Yeah.
I can understand that. Let me see here. Is there an area that you've seen a lot of change, either here in Madison since you've been here in the LGBT movement, or even at home? In the last, I guess, just any changes.
I can't say about home, because last time I went home was 2009, 2010, that Christmas break.
Okay.
So it has been, 3 years. I'm going back home again this year. So I don't know about back home. Mm-hmm. And I'll see when I go back this year. In Madison, I would say, I don't know whether it's because I came out and I go to different events and try to be active in the community. Maybe that's why I see more queer people. Mm-hmm. But somehow it seems to me that Madison has increased the concentration of queer people, which might not be true. It just be my might be my perception.
Right.
I would say area-wise, I have noticed that Willie Street is kind of becoming a little gay neighborhood because many of my friends who used to live all over the town, they gradually have moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very friendly street. And in fact, I am moving to the east side. I live on the west side now. I'm moving to like 3 blocks east of the Capitol Square this August. And that would be all within walking distance of all my friends, gay friends, who mostly live in the Willie Street area. Which would be nice.
That's
I'm looking
nice.
Forward to it.
That's very nice. Do you think that in your relationships with like the, your other classmates, I guess you are in grad students, so maybe they're
mm-hmm.
older anyhow. Do you see that there's more acceptance in grad school maybe than in undergrad school?
It's hard to compare because I went to undergrad somewhere else.
Oh, that's true.
It's very
yeah.
hard to compare.
Sure.
But I would say, though, I have had friends who seemed like they did not they never made negative comments about queer people. But it seemed like they might not be very comfortable around them. But they're already my friends, and when I came out, it didn't seem like they really were bothered by the news.
Mm-hmm.
News. And I think I made sure that I kept my friendship with them and kept in contact with them. You know how it happens in grad school. As you progress through grad school, you get busier and busier in your own research and life. And you kind of, you retain some friendships, but some of them kind of become like distant friends. And I actually tried to especially keep in touch. I mean, if they're good friends, of course,
mm-hmm.
I keep in touch. But if I sense like someone who is kind of ambivalent or neutral about this issue
mm-hmm.
of queer life and queer rights, I made a special effort to remain friends with them. It seemed like it has been perfect. They're like, oh, he seems to be the same person. I don't know what I was thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's their thought. They're like, oh, this guy I know for 4 years now, and for, I don't know, 1 or 2 years, I didn't know that he's gay, and now I know that he's gay. And you know what? Nothing really has changed between us. So I guess this gay thing is not particularly different in society after all.
Yeah.
Which I think is important.
I do too. I hope that as our generations grow, they all become more accepting and more understanding of other people's differences.
Like, I have a friend who is very religious, from a very religious Christian family. And when I came out to him, he told me he looked kind of stunned. And the next day I asked him, like, I didn't mean to, like, jump this on you, but this just came up because you asked about something and I said something about dating a guy. And then you look freaked out. I hope you are still not freaked out. And he said something like, as a good Christian, he cannot condone homosexuality. I'm like, that's fine. As an atheist, I don't condone you being a Christian either, but that doesn't mean that we can't be friends. And then we are backpacking friends. Like, we have done backpacking in Wyoming and Montana. And he told him, like, you know, we are planning another backpacking trip that summer, just the two of us. And if you feel uncomfortable with that, I understand. And that's fine. I would not be mad at you. And he was upset. But he's like, no, of course I want to go because you're an awesome backpacker and he had so much fun. So of course I would go. I'm just saying that from my thinking and my theological viewpoint, I find it hard to accept. And it seems like nowadays, whenever I run into him, I talk about my boyfriend's daughters or my boyfriend and stuff, and I forced these conversations from time to time to make it regularized, and nowadays he seems fine. So
that's wonderful.
I think it works.
That's wonderful.
Like, sometimes you can just, you know, you can just force thoughts on people. Sometimes you have to be a little bit understanding and just show them that, you know, whatever you're thinking, I don't know, you're paranoid about things, and it's whatever you're thinking is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So what gay things do you do?
What gay things do I do? I don't know. What are gay things?
I don't know. That's why I was kind of wondering.
What do I do that day? I don't know. I mean,
hang out. That's, you know, that's
have lots of gay friends. Most of my friends are.
So your community of friends. That's a so you hang out.
I guess that would be a. That would be a very gay thing to have all your most of your friends being gay and having a gay boyfriend.
Yeah, that works.
And I don't know. It's hard to define what's gay. I find it hard because I know so many men and women who are gay and they are so many different people. You can't really say that. I guess the only thing is gay about me is that I like guys.
Fair enough. Yeah, I get, that was a poorly worded question. Sorry. I meant it more as, you know.
What gay things I do? Well, I like going out, if that's gay. I like dancing. I like especially going out to gay bars because if I'm going out and having fun and talking to people, they better not be offended if I hit on them. You know, or if I tell them you're cute and they can say, like, I'm straight. Like, wow, clearly you're at the wrong place.
Exactly. Not really. But that makes a good point. I guess I understand that. Mm-hmm.
I picked up a new hobby recently. I was painting Anne's daughter's nails, toenails, and I realized that it's very relaxing because it requires focus and concentration. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll try it. And, you know, they are in organic solvent, so when they evaporate, it kind of gets cool. So it's almost like taking a bath kind of experience. It's very meditative. You feel good about yourself because you're taking care of your own body.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking a shower or a bath or getting a massage.
Yeah.
So I now, it's me and Anne, we have this new hobby now. We pick colors for each other. And sometimes when we are not doing anything else, we just sit at home and paint nails. It's very relaxing. And Sophia and Marty, they're the daughters. So they get very excited. Ooh, your color is better than mine.
That's wonderful. So for your, I guess, maybe back up a little bit, like your first serious relationship, like long-term?
Back
in high school.
Because, you know, if you go to a boarding school, you live 24/7 together for many months.
Oh, sure.
At a go. Unless you are seriously ill or something, or you are given a detention from school. You don't go back home. So our school starts sometime before summer. So we have a month of school, then we have the summer, then we have a few months of school, then we have a break in autumn, which is equivalent to Christmas here. Because it's a big religious event, which doesn't matter whether you're religious or not, because it's part of your culture. And then you have school again through the winter. Then you have Christmas break when you don't go back home. You stay there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have classes. And it's actually a wonderful time because it's winter and you have cricket matches between classes and sections and football matches and soccer, real football.
Yeah. Yeah.
And things like that. And then you have a few months of school and then you have the final exams, the annual exams. And then you have the end of the year break. So you spend time at home, but you spend time at a stretch. And I definitely remember, like, you miss your friends, you know, when you're home.
Mm-hmm.
When the vacations are coming up, you're anxious to get out and go home because you want to be home and comfortable.
Yeah.
And when you don't have to wash your own clothes and do your own dishes and clean your stuff. And
sure.
When you go back home, you still, then it becomes a habit that you just do it anyway. But it feels nice that one day if you don't feel like it, your mom can do it or your dad can do it.
That's nice.
Or you can sleep in, because in boarding school you wake up early. Like, you wake up, you have a prayer, then you have a drill and physical exercise session, and then you have breakfast, and then cleaning. You have to clean the dorms twice a day.
Oh.
Quite strict. Then you have the study hour, then you have an early lunch, then you have school, then you have a mini snack, and then you have more school. Then you go back, you clean your dorm again.
Wow.
And then you have an afternoon meal. Then you have an hour and 20 minutes of play time. Then you come back and wash up and clean up. And then you have a prayer hour. It's not really an hour. And then you have a study hour. And then it's dinner. And then between dinner and time for bed, you have to hang out with friends. So you can imagine if you live with 100 classmates who all are your friends, by the time, like, after 2 weeks being in home, you're like, I'm bored, let's go back. When you just, you know, I even remember ticking up dates on the calendar, waiting for the school to start again.
Do you think when you have children, do you think that you will educate them differently than you were educated?
I don't know. It's hard for parents to send kids to boarding school. It's sacrificing. Kids think that they are sacrificing their time with parents, but it's not true. Parents sacrifice more when they send you to boarding school. I like the idea of boarding school because I think I learned a lot from boarding school. Yeah. Kind of. By the time you're out of there, you're ready for the outside world. You live in a, like, mini community.
Yeah.
It's kind of, like, similar to being grown up and living on your own.
Yeah.
You are responsible for yourself. You are not a college kid who has, like, you know, trash lying around and clothes everywhere. Because you are trained for so many years that it just bothers you, you know?
Right.
You learn to... I like cooking a lot, which I did not start in boarding school. I started that later in college when I realized that I like food and then I could pick out what spices are there. And then I realized, oh, maybe I can start making them. And now I cook a lot. What did this question start again? I'm such a talker.
I don't know. Don't go. You're great. This is, actually, no, that's fine. Because you're talking about what you like to do.
Whether the education of kids.
Yeah.
I like the idea of boarding school, but it has its hardship too. I'm not sure. I think it's hard. It's hard to say unless you are bringing up your kids since, like, they are a baby.
Right.
I don't have that experience.
Right.
I have a lot of experience with toddlers, and because both my mom and dad's side of the family is quite large, and I have lots of cousins. And when I was, like, maybe I'm 8 and I have a 4-year-old cousin, people would totally leave them with me.
No.
So that I can play with them and put them to bed, etc.
Yeah.
So I'm used to taking care of kids for a long time, but I have not really... Bringing up a baby is different. So I think that kind of... That probably kind of influences your decisions on what you're going to do with your child's education. So I don't know whether I would do it differently or not. But I would say one thing that I have noticed from my undergraduate students at UW, I feel like if sometimes, even if they're really intelligent and well-prepared for life and well-educated, sometimes I feel like they really lack good reading skills. Their reading skills are often quite terrible. So I kind of feel like maybe reading is not a very, it's not stressed in school here. And I kind of feel like, I think it's a necessity.
Yeah.
Like, if I am asked to make one change in the US school system, it would be a little bit more focus on basic sciences and a little bit more focus on literature and language and grammar. They're often terrible. Like, people who are coming to college, if you're asking them in an exam to answer your question in 2 concise sentences, they can't convert their thoughts to 2 concise sentences. It's terrible. So, yeah. When I went to school, like, I remember that the language classes are most hard. Like, they're the hardest classes for 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th graders, 7th, up like that age. Those are hard classes. Most people don't do very well in literature classes because their reading skills are not that well developed and their writing skills are not well developed. But if you have a curriculum which is hard, even if they have a hard time with it, they learn from it. I think it's more important to do that than, you know, present like, education is fun and see, this is color and light and videos. Like, they had fun, but did they learn anything? That the reason they came to school is not to have only fun. Yes, education should be fun. Learning should be fun. But fun should not precede learning. And I kind of feel like that's often the case.
Do you think your dad... Well, I guess I should ask this before you ask if you think your dad did anything at all. Did you get to see your dad? Like, could you have, like... Whereas other kids that... Because your dad was at school, were you able to, like, see him on a regular basis because he was a teacher?
Yeah, he was also... So, when you have a language course... You have 2 language papers. One is the literature paper where, you know, whatever you read. And then you have a grammar and composition paper where you learn about grammar and you have rapid reading. So they're slightly larger books. And so you need good, different sort of writing skills, essays and stuff. And he was teaching that class for my section from sixth grade to 10th grade. So I had him as my teacher for 5 years. He's a good teacher.
That's what a nice thing for you to say.
And I always had to do the homework, right? Your dad can come walk into class and ask who didn't do the homework. You can say I didn't do it. I always did my homework, but it landed me in grad school.
So maybe you could send your children to boarding school. You just have to make sure you're teaching at the school. Maybe that would work for you.
Maybe
too.
I think
that he got something there, because that would be
he
hard.
He did,
being
and
you
kind of like, you can't really be too mischievous, because you know everything gets reported back to your dad. It's different to be reported to a teacher than your teacher and dad, so.
Yeah, you're not getting away with anything. There doesn't need to be a phone call home, probably.
Right, also, and like, this is the system, and you don't call your dad in the classroom.
Sure.
Still your teacher in the classroom. I've never called him dad in the classroom.
Yeah.
They'd be super awkward.
Yeah. Is there anything that, Parse, that you have that, any questions? I just saw maybe you jotted a couple things.
Yeah, I do have a couple things. First of all, you mentioned queer gag grads a couple times. Could you tell me a little bit more about what you know of it, the history, and how you got involved?
It came into being in 2008, and let me remember, I have a friend called Will Cox, who is a graduate student in the psychology department, and he started the group. And gradually, you know, it became popular. And then even if he's not there, we have a fixed time. It's every Thursday. It used to be every Thursday at 6:30. I stopped going a year ago because I got so busy in lab that by the time I finish work, people are gone from there. So I don't know whether they still meet at 6:30.
Mm.
And I kind of feel bad because I got a lot out of it because I met my friends and everything. And I kind of feel like I'm not giving back enough because I don't go there. But I believe they still meet every Thursday in the union, in the Rothkeller. And they have a big sign that says Q Grads. And they also used to have a little wooden truck with a garden gnome on top, which used to hold the LGBT flag. But I don't know whether they still have it. We used to keep it at the campus center usually and just drag it out. And by the time we finished our meetings, the campus center would be closed. So someone would take care of it and they would return it the next morning to the campus center. Because no one wants to keep it because they don't know whether they would be there for sure. Kind of like a free-floating group.
Sure.
People come and go. You can always meet new people. Especially when you come to grad school first, it's very nice to just instantly have 8 or 10 gay friends in different departments, which is also very important. It's not only from your department.
Yeah, absolutely. Does it have anything to do with the LGBTQ center? I mean, is it
it's just a independent fun group. It doesn't have any agenda. You don't talk about, you know, you don't really talk about queer rights. I mean, you can, but it's not on the agenda. It's a free floating group. You just go there, maybe have some beer. If you don't drink beer, maybe have some soda.
Yeah.
If you don't drink caffeine, have some water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fruit juice. And hang out there, you know, get cheese curds.
Yeah.
Talk about your dating life or your research. Hopefully not. talk about what movies are coming out. Talk about whether this weekend your cousin is visiting, who is also gay.
Yeah.
Or your ex-boyfriend is visiting and you want to take them out. I mean, whatever. It's a social group. It's not
cool.
A social activist group. It's a social hangout group. So I think which is very special, which is why it's so successful, because groups like that are important. They need to exist. I don't know whether it's kind of like you have 10% society for undergraduates, but they have their regular meetings and agenda, and then they mail out the, you know, minutes of the meeting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, there are no minutes. There's no meeting. There's not even
a
head of the group. Anyone can come. And typically I've seen the last couple of years, like, someone would go for a couple of years. Maybe they would get busy, not go. Then new people would come in. Someone would start going in their fifth year of grad school because all of a sudden they discovered it's so much fun. So it's a completely free-floating group.
That's wonderful. I had never heard of it before, so I appreciate that.
They also have a Facebook page, so it's quite easy to find them. I'm not sure they're on the campus LGBT Center website, but they have a list of, you know, queer groups in the on campus.
Okay.
I believe they have it listed.
Okay. Okay.
Can you talk more about Willie Street? Like, you mentioned that you have a lot of friends who are gay on that street. Is it known as a gay street? I would say that in quotes.
I would not say it's. I think it's known as a gay street only to gay people, not really
okay.
to mainstream media. But I think, as I think back, I mean, it used to be alternative culture street anyway, you know, kind of hippie-ish,
mm-hmm.
you know, hippies or modern hippies or people live there. And I think it all started back in 2008 when Plan B opened there. And then, you know, it kind of turned the neighborhood a bit gay,
mm-hmm.
in a very positive sense of the word gay, I must
mm-hmm.
mention. And people just started moving in there because they liked the neighborhood. They liked that it has an alternative culture. And as with alternative cultures, they're accepting of other alternative cultures. Not always, but as
mm-hmm.
often is the case. And people started moving in there because it's nice there. It's close to the downtown. It's not far from campus. You have nice buses. And I would say, now that I think, you know, probably six out of my every 10 queer friends live in that area.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, it's probably like if you want to define one part to be more queer than other in Madison, Willie Street to Atwood, because lots of my gay and lesbian and bi friends live there.
Okay.
Some of them are moving out because they finished school and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's always such a hard time.
That's the thing about being in school, is that people are coming and going. It's a bit hard sometimes.
Do you have anything else about
it? Yeah, you also mentioned you go to some gay bars. Do you mind mentioning the names of them, and how did you get to know them?
How did I get to know the gay bars? I got to know Plan B because my friend Ken, who is in my program and my classmate, on his birthday, he's like, yeah, let's go to the den to have some beers, and then you can go dancing at Plan B. I'm like, oh, what is that? He's like, oh, it's a new club. It's a gay club. I'm like, yes, let's go. So that's how I got to know about it. And then once you start going to one place, then people talk about other places. I don't exactly remember how I learned about Shamrock. I believe my friend Mike, the professor who was here for a full academic year, he told me, he's like, oh, have you ever been to Shamrock? I'm like, no, where is it? And he said, it's on the square. And then we figured out, like, okay, let's do an intern. Like, when we started going out a lot, and he's very sweet. He's married, and his husband is a director of a museum in Virginia.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, let's check out what other places are there. Then I gradually discovered Wolf's, which is on King Street, right next to Opus Lounge. I discovered Shamrock, which is next to the Frequency on West Main Street, just up the square. And Club 5, which is a little bit less accessible unless you're driving, and then you have to have a designated driver because you're not going to drink and drive. I don't recommend it, kids don't do it. So sometimes I drive if Mike wants to drink, or he'll drive if I want to drink, or maybe he would have one drink.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like driving when I'm drinking at all. Completely avoid it. Like, one is okay, but that's it. Basically those are four like really like designated, yes, we are a queer bar kind of bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot think of any other. Oh, there's a new one called Soto, on Soto as in subterranean.
Oh.
Italian. It's on State Street, and I have been there a few times. I don't go there very often because it's right on State Street and the crowd seem to be a bit younger and different, and you know, everyone has their favorite places. It's a very nice place, a good place to go dancing, but most people who go are undergraduate students, and they're quite younger than me. And why it's often nice to talk to younger people, it's not, you don't always, sometimes you just want to hang out with people of your generation, or where grad students or professional people go, because you tend to have more friends who are around your age sometimes. Or I think once you go past 25, 26, then it doesn't matter if your friend is 25 or 45 or 55.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's definitely an age where you grow up quite fast. Like, just you get out of college, you get a job, and then you are out there in real life. And 2 or 3 years, I think, it's like you gain lots of experience, and I think people change a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay,
so I used to go to 10% Society as well, which is a great group. But again, it seemed like more for younger people, and
mm-hmm.
while I enjoyed whenever I went there, it seemed like you know, I can, there are other groups which are more suitable for me, or what kind of social interactions I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not looking for a social interaction of having a board game. I'm more looking for something like, you know, how can I help at the fruit fest? Can I hold booth for LGBT group on campus,
mm-hmm.
or Fair Wisconsin, something like that, or, you know, talk about, have a very serious discussion about what do you think about marriage equality, what it means.
Mm.
Do you want to fight for marriage equality? Don't you think it's more, much more important to get this federal law passed that, you know, discrimination for your sexual orientation should be banned,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot get fired? I think it's more important for us to not get fired from our jobs just because we are gay or lesbian,
yeah.
or queer, than having the right to marry. And personally, I don't care if it's called marriage or not. I think whether it's called different, like, if it's not called marriage, I disagree then that it's different. Because if you, from my perspective, if I have the same legal rights, then that's it. I don't care if it's called marriage or domestic partnership or civil marriage,
mm-hmm.
anything like that. I don't really care, as
mm-hmm.
long as I have the same legal benefits, because that's all it's about to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One question I did have. Since you're in a relationship now, does your, do your, like the plan B and where do you guys go as a couple when you guys go out?
All the places I used to go out before.
Okay, sure.
It's the same, not really different.
Okay.
And besides, Madison is a small city. I mean, how many places you can have? You can go out anywhere.
That's true.
I like going out to the terrace a lot in summer. It's so nice out there. And the sunsets are beautiful.
Mm.
They often have live music. They have the Monday night movies.
Again,
on summer. Last night they were showing, I was not actually watching the movie. I was hanging out on the lake, but I heard the movie, like what's going on a little bit, and it seemed like it was Indiana Jones, The Lost Ark. That one.
Good job.
I go out to the same places, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think I go out to any different places than it used to be before.
Yeah. Do you go out as much?
Mm-hmm. Not as much. And I don't think it has... Well, I think I would go out less if I was not in a relationship. Usually it's grad school. You are so busy. You don't always go out. I would still say I probably still go out more than other grad students. Which is a wonderful part of being queer. Because going out is part of culture. And not for everyone, but in general, which I quite like. People need to get out and socialize. People in this country live too solitary life. When I moved here, that was one difficulty I faced. Like, you finish work and then, you're going home cooking dinner and watching TV and going to bed. Okay, why can't we cook dinner together and watch TV together? Like, why not? Oh, I need some time to myself. Like, I understand, but 7 days a week? Like, really? That's fine. To me, that's sad.
Yeah.
Unless you really, really don't like to hang out with anyone else but yourself.
Oh, that's funny. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that I didn't ask about or that...
Anything else?
That you're dying to tell the world?
That I'm dying to tell the world so that anyone who wants to listen to this can find this on the library website or the archives. I don't know. I don't know. I love playing tennis.
That's
and great. Badminton and ping pong. I played badminton and ping pong for my college. That was a lot of fun. And I really enjoy racket sports. And I don't know this, but if someone is listening to this letter and if they're going to form a gay tennis group, they should definitely contact me because I'd totally be in.
I'm going to put that in there. We'll make sure that gets in there.
A gay tennis group or a gay ping pong or badminton, any gay racket sports group, I'm totally in. Anyone. I don't have the energy right now to put something like that together. I'd like to, but seems like a lot of work. As long as someone else is putting in that effort and, you know, forming the group, I'd be up for trying to, you know, help them and upkeeping of the group. But I don't think I have the energy to do it myself right now.
Wonderful.
Grad school in chemistry is hard. You always have a 11, 12-hour work
it's
day,
off,
and then work and one day a weekend. Not day, but a few hours it's pretty intense and busy, and it's fun. But I do miss, you know, I used to do a lot of sports in college, and I miss that a little bit.
Mm.
I wish I could play some sort of racket sports every single day for an hour. That would be nice. Because when I was in college, when I was playing ping pong and badminton, I would play both sports for an hour and 15 minutes or 20 minutes every day.
Wow.
I skipped some classes to manage that, but, you know. I was, apart from my chemistry major, I had a physics and math minor, and I don't recommend this, but I did not attend many classes because I figured out those courses were quite not very hard. And I had friends in physics and I had friends in math who had chemistry as their minor. So I helped them out and I would tutor them in chemistry and they would tutor me in physics and math. And I passed all my courses without attending many classes. But I think those time were well spent, you know. I spent those time doing politics, student politics.
Yeah.
Roaming around the city. I find it fascinating to walk to any city. Like, I think half of my college life I spent walking through different neighborhoods of Calcutta. I actually know the neighborhoods extremely well. I don't know many people who know them as well. Like, I can probably walk through most of them by now.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I really know the city very well. I miss it. Because I miss that one thing in Madison. It's not very small. But from time to time, it seems a bit repetitive, you know. It's the same bus I take to work, same buildings. Mm-hmm. It's not like living in a big city. Even on the bus, the same people take the same bus at the same time. And after a while, you were like, well, I either need to go camping or backpacking out in the woods, or I need to go to a big, like some sort of break from the city.
Yeah.
This city is nice. But the nice thing about Madison is every time I go out of the town, and I come back, and I am always glad to come back because I like living here. It's a very nice city. Like, every time I come back, it's like, whew, it's good to be back.
That's
like,
nice.
I was at a wedding this weekend. My friend Sarah, who was in grad school with me, but she left with a master's. She figured out she likes teaching more, and she doesn't like research that much. It was a wedding. I was part of the wedding party. It was a lot of fun.
Oh.
It was a lot of fun. And I enjoyed walking around all around Houghton. In my painted turquoise nails and wearing flip-flops, and people looked and some people smiled, and I was actually surprised. It seemed like a very, very friendly city. The nightlife was good. They had good clubs. We went out dancing. They had good music. People were dancing. They were sexy. They are not awkward. They were quite happy. It was not a gay club. It was a, what would be? It's not a straight club either. It's a regular club.
Gotcha.
Let's say. And I had a lot of fun there. It was good to see her parents because when she lived here, her parents would drive down here. They're all from UP. And we would have Thanksgiving with them. So it's kind of like a good bond. They're actually planning. Her brother lives in Milwaukee. So they drive down often. I told them, why don't you come to Madison? It's like only an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to visit me sometime. And they like hockey, and I like hockey a lot. That's the only popular North American sport I like.
Ah.
I like football games in the fourth quarter if it's close, but otherwise it's too long and boring for me. I like rugby. That's why football is boring for me. I like hockey a lot. I used to have season tickets. I didn't this year because I didn't have time. They like hockey, so they'll probably come here. And, you know, they're a conservative Catholic family, but... I mean, I went to the wedding and Aaron was my plus one and he went as my date and we danced and then, you know, I introduced him as my boyfriend and they were very happy to meet him. So, you know, you just have to be friendly. You can't always be aggressive about things. You can't always think that you can just fight and get accepted. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more tactful than that. And that's what I would say. That if you're trying to... you know, make people see that you after coming out, you are still the same person. And there's no reason for them to treat you differently or expect anything different from you. You need to be friendly towards them and nice towards them and show them that this is my life and it's nice.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
It
was
great
an honor. I was so happy when Bennett told me, like, really? I totally get interviewed. I love talking.
Well, like I said, your story is incredible. I'm so happy to get to meet you, and it doesn't surprise me that you do all right in life. I think you're a pretty nice guy to meet. So this
thank
is.
Thank you for waiting for me, even if I was late.
So this is Chris Haas, and we're signing off with Queer Wisconsin.